Hello and welcome to the Melissa Diaz Report. My name is Melissa Diaz, reporting to you from Austin, Texas. Austin, Texas. Is that the right music for that, for this region? I don't know. Okay, I'm from New York. I don't know shit. Anyway, Sue. Yeehaw! Austin's not really like that. Austin's kind of like, yeehaw! Oh my god, I love when you pretend to be a horse. Oh, kinky. That's Austin. But it's fun because of it. You know what's not fun? Today. So many reasons. So many reasons for today not being the best of days. Not the most positive of days. Lots of stuff happening in the news. So-called bloody week. And all that stuff. Charlie Kirk got assassinated. It's the 24th anniversary of 9/11. There's people all over saying stuff about it. Lots of wonderful, beautiful platitudes going up out there. There's no place for violence in this country. That's my favorite one so far. No place for violence in America. Yes, there is. It's called, the place for violence in America is called America. America! America! I'll bust a cap on your ass if you look at me a weird way. I'll shoot you straight to hell. Yeah. America. Don't get me wrong. I like America. I do. I really have grown to like it. I was in a place where I hated America. When I was young, I hated America. That was my head inside whenever I thought of America. I was like a rabid dog in there. So much injustice. That was before I realized it could actually be much, much worse, and that things are actually the best they can be here, weirdly enough, even though they're not nearly as good as they should be. I know this is a contradiction from what I just said, but even better than they can be. Or as good as it can be. Is that what I was saying? Yes. Yes. Yes, America. 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 Just watch out when you go downtown. In any major city, someone might shank you down. America. Yeah, I grew up in a low-income neighborhood in New York City. Immigrants, disgruntled former hippies, activists, Puerto Ricans, still angry about being a colony, basically. I know it's called the Commonwealth, but we all know what it is. Okay. And so I didn't have the best initial opinion of America. But now, hopefully, I hope I'm in a better place where it's a little more nuanced. I see a little more. I know a little bit more. I feel a little better adjusted because of it. I don't know if even what I know now and feel and my opinions are right. I just know that they make me feel better, less anxious, less. It's not even about not being anxious. It's about just being less disgruntled. Because you don't want to be disgruntled. If your worldview about things like America are making you feel disgruntled, you got to reevaluate. Not because maybe the things you know about America, the history of America, the history of coups CIA-backed coups and puppet regimes in Latin America, in the Middle East, in the whole fucking world. Sure. If you're from a region that had that experience, or you started out from that point, vantage point, you know, that's why wouldn't you feel disgruntled about it? But if you're disgruntled about more subtle shit, like, you know what I mean? Like, where it starts to actually twist you into some like creature that kind of that skulks around protests and shit, and isn't just to kind of feel the negative energy and feed it, then you're something else. You know, that's not good for you. It's not good. You have to grow. You got to change and transcend that shit, because it'll eat you up inside. And for what? Right? Go to your therapist and he's like, let's say you have a state mandated therapist for whatever reason. He's like, what's bothering you? You're like, I am fucking so upset, disgruntled. The world is so bleak. And he's like, why? And then you go, because of the geopolitical situation. You know what I mean? That's retarded. And you're better than that, because nobody really knows about the geopolitical situation. That's why they have analysts on it 24/7, because everyone's trying to scramble and figure out what the hell's going on. At the drop of a hat, something changes, a guy gets assassinated, and now we're scrambling back to the drawing board trying to figure out where this is going. What does this mean? And that's what every news outlet's doing. And they don't know. They don't actually know. They have experience, though. They have wisdom. You know, people personally, journalists working their whole lives, maybe 50 years, right? Maybe you have kind of an inkling of like where this might go or something, and that's valuable input. But the dust is, shit is still hitting the fan. The dust hasn't settled. There's a lot to be upset about in this country, even. There's a lot. There's a lot of shit happening. The United Healthcare shit. There's a lot happening that to make people feel like they are experiencing a very unjust society, you know, flourish or come into existence, and nobody's there to stop it, because the people that have the means don't have the inclination. So what are you gonna do? But you can't do, you, if you're just some person like me, right, you gotta grow. That's my opinion. That's all I gotta say. You gotta grow. You gotta grow. I mean, really what I mean is you gotta get a passport. You gotta get the fuck out of here. Get out of here. Go. Be free. Be wild and free. Fly, butterfly. Go to the south of France or something. And, you know, get some perspective. Chill out. Don't self-destruct. That's what I'm saying. No matter where you're at in your life, if you're just self-destructing through whatever means, something's going on, your personal life plus the political landscape is really getting you down, I gotta say, maybe get your head out of your ass and go to the gym or something. Go for a walk. Look at the sky. Do something. Marcus Aurelius. This one quote that I remember, I read through his, compendium of quotes. Some book that's out there, a bunch of quotes. Tweets. It's Marcus Aurelius's tweets, basically. And back then, tweets were pretty much hardcore, because you were just kind of tweeting to nobody, because everybody was illiterate. So you just tweeted authentically. Nobody was there. Tweet like no one's watching. That was the motto back then in the ancient times. One of the things he said, I actually paraphrased this one time to Gene, and then I read it, and it's way different. But I like my paraphrase better. It's a little softer than the actual quote. But it's basically like, you know, if you're ever feeling overwhelmed or tunnel vision, or you can't see the forest for the trees, for that kind of vibe, right? You got to go look at the sky. Remember this big vast thing over you, this firmament. Remember, and get perspective again about how big you are in this, and what you are, and who you are, what everything is, you know. And it does, and I've tried it works. But actually, the actual quote is a little more hardcore. It's kind of something like, look at the, you know, to gain perspective, look at the sky, and then we'll cleanse yourself of the filth of the earth. That's kind of the actual quote. But, you know, I think my interpretation is accurate and nicer. So go with that one. Anyway. But, yeah, I had to look at the sky a lot today to try to find some silver lining about today, about what, I don't know, what's something that I'm grateful for. And I would say, I thought about it, one thing I think is cool, amazing, is that because Charlie Kirk was assassinated, unjustly, I would say, I don't think it was called for. I don't think that rhetoric equals you deserve physical violence. I'm not anti-gun to the point where I don't think people should have guns. Let's put it that way. I think common sense laws, sure. Straight up no guns, no. So just so you know where I'm at with that. Just so you know. So you know. But I do think that because he was assassinated, one thing I am kind of grateful for is that because it's 9/11, we don't have to hear everyone's story about where they were during 9/11. Isn't that great? That's kind of cool. I dreaded it because it's not like you feel like you can talk about anything else. If you were there, it's not like, I don't think people are talking about where they were during 9/11 because not everybody, because they want to brag about it or make it about them. Although some do. New Yorkers do. New Yorkers will make any tragedy about themselves. That's kind of, it goes with the culture because the city makes you feel like this, you're in the center of the earth. You're at the center of everything in the country. The trendsetter, everything, fashion, finance, all that shit. So you get a kind of a pretty inflated sense of ego because of it. But I think it's just genuinely like, we want to come together and just kind of commiserate and ignore it, but we don't have anything better to say. So we just kind of go, yeah, I remember where I was in 9/11. I remember I was in a basement. I had my pants down around my ankles. It wasn't sexual. I was looking for, I felt a lump in my, testicles. And then the next thing I know, I run downstairs and say, Mike, pull your pants up, you fucking gaylord, get a 9/11. So, you just kind of feel the need. It's just like, this is your input. This is all you can give is what happened for you. And it's annoying, but it's been going on for 24 years. That's what I'm saying. The 24th time of a person having to come and show and tell this fucking night where I was in 9/11. It starts to feel like the Pledge of Allegiance. It's such a chore, but you don't know what else to do. So we were all kind of trapped in this cycle, those of us who lived through it, during it. I'm not saying we all lived through it, obviously, but I'm just saying, you know what I'm saying. Fuck you. Anyway, so it's just crazy because today we don't have to. And I think that's one small thing that I'm grateful for. I don't have to hear everyone's 9/11 story on 9/11, and that's pretty cool. That's great. In fact, StoryCorps did a whole thing where everyone got to go to Ground Zero or anywhere, really. They started shopping it around schools, everywhere, any shopping malls, and you could just go in a little booth and just unload your 9/11 story, and then it's there in the archives of StoryCorps. And it's like, isn't that good enough? We should have all just done that. And that's your 9/11 story. If anybody wants to go check it out, let them go do that. Anyway, other than that, though, it's pretty terrible. I mean, it's awful. This is not cool. Yeah, that's my input. Not cool. Charlie Kirk. So, yeah, all the news outlets are covering it. I mean, I got a couple of things from AP. I did want to see the video. I wanted to watch the video of it happen. Some people I know acted like they're too good for that. Not me, baby. I didn't do it. I don't know why I did it. Let's really analyze this. I'm going to be as honest as I can. I wanted to watch it. I just wanted to be a part of that history somehow. I wanted it, and I wanted to see. I wanted to see it. See it. Other things I don't want to see, like that guy that that stabbed that Ukrainian chick in Chicago. I didn't really want to see that. The George Floyd thing, I thought I wanted to see it. When I saw it, I realized I did not want to see that, but that in some way it was maybe necessary. But the Charlie Kirk thing, I don't know. I felt like a need, like a perverse, a prurient sort of like need, something just like a perverse impulse in me, like a compulsion to just go and look at it. Look at it. And that's really ugly. That's an ugly feeling. It's not good. I don't claim any kind of valor or virtue in that feeling that compelled me to go on X, Twitter, whatever, and comb through it until I found the video of the assassination. I don't know. I just wanted to. I wanted to see it. It reminds me. One time when I was a little kid in the Bronx. I grew up in the Bronx, not the best of neighborhoods. I wouldn't say I was not living in fucking Compton or anything like that. I was not in a place where it was just nonstop violence. There was shady stuff going on, like the church across the street from where I lived. That was where the drug dealers went to go sell stuff and whatever. There was all people asking kids to carry guns in their book bags down the way so that they could get past cops. There was like stuff. There was shady stuff. My babysitter got stabbed to death, but by a mentally ill guy who was dating her daughter at the time. You know, it was just the thing about low income poverty, destitution / you know, like living with like trashy people in a trashy neighborhood, right? You're not trash in the sense that you have no value. It's trash when you live your life and you throw it away. Like you throw away your life. But sometimes people throw away your life for you, and that doesn't feel too good. So you're all kind of like in this stew. And so the kind of the worst impulses tend to flourish in areas like that. I remember one time I was coming home from school and I heard a gunshot. And I was a really little kid. And the streets were basically empty. It was sun. I remember the sun was really bright, casting really sharp shadows across the pavement from the trees and the buildings. And all of a sudden, it was like the street came to life, much like in the musical Hamilton, where there's nothing. There's fire escapes, there's nothing, there's bodega. But then all of a sudden, like it just, the whole neighborhood just spins to life, like a cuckoo clock just coming to life. It's like the hour is struck, but in this instance, it was like it struck one gunshot. And so everything just exploded to life, and people started sprinting in my direction because behind me was where that shot came from and the sound of it. And I just see all these people just sprinting towards me, running because they want to see what happened. They want to see who got shot, what happened. So, and I remember I was pretty small at the time. I was a little girl, and I didn't follow them. I was just in shock at what was happening around me. Everyone's sprinting towards me. A guy jumped over my head. He cleared my head like a good 5 inches above my head. I remember I look up and I see the taint part of his jeans just gliding right over my head, over the crown of my head. And he just, and then he landed behind me, and then he kept running, sprinting towards the gunshot. And they ran and ran, and everyone, and then suddenly the street was empty again, because everybody had, that who was going to go check it out had done it. And I was just like, okay. And then I just shrugged my shoulders and I went home, because I was reading a book at the time that I think I was really into. It was probably like the Hardy Boys or Nancy Drew or some crap, Babysitter's Club. I don't know. And I had to get home and read it. So maybe Harriet the Spy. I have no idea. Those were the books I read. Books about a lot of white kids in a neighborhood where there weren't many. There were maybe three. But it was interesting. And that's how I felt when I went and looked for that video. I felt like those people that day just running. What happened? I want to see. But sometimes it's, but on some level, it's like you just want to go bear witness. You want to be a part of some history. You want, it's like FOMO, I guess, but a fucked up kind of FOMO. Fucked up FOMO. FUFOMO. FUFOMO is when it's fucked up FOMO, where it's like, yeah, you're afraid of missing out, but it's fucked up. Fucked up FOMO. FOMO, but fucked up. FOMOBFU. FOMOBFU. I like that better. FOMO, but fucked up. FOMOBFU. FOMOBFU. Anybody want to take that? Put it on the internet? Because I'm not. They're doing a lot for Charlie Kirk right now. It's basically, you know, at this point, nobody's going to, it's not going to be a bipartisan rallying cry for peace or anything. I mean, it's just basically the usual suspects saying the usual bullshit. So it's people on the right, basically like pulling clips from MSNBC and anybody who's saying like he kind of deserved, he had it coming, basically. Nobody's saying he deserved it straight up. They're saying he had it coming because of his speech, and I don't like his opinions. And then the left side is going like, I don't know, it's kind of, it varies. There's no room for violence. And but those are the talking heads. And then the people, which I defer to my Facebook feed for people, because I never, during COVID, I don't think I really blocked anybody. Anybody I disagreed with, I kept everybody. And it's a lot of different kinds of people that I met over the last, you know, 30 years of my life or whatever. And so they're on there. And so I get a pretty good gauge of a wide spectrum of opinion, gloating to abhorrence, to, you know, all kinds of stuff. And so, yeah, the people are, it's the same. They're kind of the same, but, you know, the people have, and these aren't even the people, these are people who just are having a mental breakdown on Facebook. Because if you're on Facebook still and you're really genuinely posting, you are probably going to have a nervous breakdown. Soon, you're just spiraling and you're on Facebook still. Nobody else is, just you. And then you're like, damn, nobody's liking my posts. I wonder if the algorithm has shadow banned me. And I just want you to know that, and you know, it's not for not everybody. This doesn't apply to everybody. But I just want you to know that we see your posts. We see it. Nobody wants to touch it. Nobody. Not with a 10-foot pole. Nobody is going to like it or comment. Nobody. Because they don't want to open up the can of worms that you have become. You're crazy. Get off Facebook and go for a walk. Okay? Go look at the sky. Go. Get the fuck out of there. Nobody's going to respond to you because you're crazy. You're an ass, and you're kind of an asshole too. You're not even, you know what I mean? You just seem unhinged and unempathetic. And that's a bad combination. So not that I think that empathy is the end all be all of goodness. I think empathy has a lot of limits. It's a lot of people who I think would identify center left or something. That's the thing I keep seeing. It's like, oh, you know, I have no empathy for him. And it's like, who gives a fuck about your empathy? This has nothing to do with your empathy, you solipsistic fucking egomaniac. This is about, was this right or was this wrong, right? It was wrong, obviously. And I don't even like the take where it's about, like people who kind of want to take this wise, all like smug, all-knowing perspective where they're like, you know, it's like, look, you know, it's ironic because what he said about guns, and look at the guns, and he died by the guns. So guns, see what I'm saying? Yeah, that's a thinker right there. And it's like, yeah, shut up. You know what I mean? You work for Uber Eats. You don't have an elevated perspective. You are not there. You're not that person. If you were, you would have a better job. Even, I'm not saying you would be a high-powered economist, even. I'm just saying you don't have that kind of perspective on life because you work for Uber Eats. Not everybody. It doesn't apply to everybody. Some people just genuinely got down on their luck, lost a lot in life, something, depression, right? But I've met enough Uber Eats people. I got my finger on the pulse a little bit. I get it, okay? So that perspective, that kind of false smugness, you can go kick rocks. I don't buy that either. A lot of takes. A lot of people trying to have good takes. I don't know. Charlie Kirk said some shit that I think, I don't know, morally indefensible is not the right take. Because the problem is that his whole rhetoric was about morally defensible positions where he is morally consistent with a certain worldview that may not be yours, but is consistent, more and morally sound in that those are his morals and they're consistent across the board, right? So he would say, I saw two clips that people keep sharing to try to show like, you know, like that kind of, I hate that self-satisfied smug, like, you see, look at this. I saw a chick who literally said she did research and that she found these quotes. It's like, you didn't do research. You were fed those quotes. They're circulating now by people who you don't even know where it came from. You don't know what private interest group is funding that, spinning it up, forwarding it, right? Making sure that it goes viral. You don't know. You don't know anything. It's just going in your head and then you're acting like it's your opinion, but you don't know that. And they're saying like, oh, Charlie Kirk said the thing about guns. What was the quote? I'm going to paraphrase this again. I'm not looking it up, but it's essentially like, I think that it is, for the greater good of the Second Amendment, right, to remain intact, for there to be a certain number of deaths every year because of, I guess, the greater evil of not having guns, of gun rights or whatever, right? Access to guns. And now people are like, you see? Well, I guess he sacrificed himself for the foot. And that's not even a take. It's kind of like, yeah, he did. I don't know. If he were alive and knew this was coming, would he change his mind? Would he say something different? I don't know. Kind of, maybe he wouldn't. Maybe he wouldn't. Maybe he would go, yeah, I'm one of those deaths, and but I believe in this, and blah, blah, blah. You know how these God people are, right? They go to the end. Their whole religion is about to the end. You don't play chicken with religious people because their whole religion is about prepping for dying, for death. So they're already thinking of that long game. So that's not a take that I find particularly interesting. So that was one. The other one was, that's more of a, you know, like the thing he said a thing during some YouTube video where a woman asked him if a 10-year-old girl was raped and had become pregnant and survived the pregnancy, but would you make her go through it, or would you allow her to abort it, the fetus, that is? And he said, no, she would have to go through with the pregnancy. And that sounds monstrous on one level. I get that. That's sad. On the other hand, it happens, and it has happened. My mom used to work in a school where that very thing had happened to a number of girls, 10-year-old girls, got assaulted by, you know, some family member, usually had to have a kid. And I don't know why they had to. They just had it. And so they just have babies and they're 11 years old. And that's fucking sad. It's horrific. It's tragic. The words don't even completely cover what it is, but at least not the ones I've used. But it's very, very sad and terrible and unjust. We live in an unjust world. That's the way that it fucking is. But the thing is that that's a morally consistent position for that guy to take. And the fact is that he believes that that is a life. It's alive. It's not like taking a dump. So that's a morally consistent position. It's very tragic. But it also doesn't mean that just because a 10-year-old girl has to have a baby, that means you just throw her away necessarily. I don't think he said that or did not say that. I'm not even going to go in that direction, though, because I don't know where his mind was completely. But what I'm saying is that it's consistent. Whereas people, and I don't know who those people are, people call them leftists now, people call them liberals now. I don't know. But you know, the kind of person that's virulently pro-choice to the point where they're willing to just all abortion all the time, right? And that it's about the woman's body and stuff. But those very I'm not trying to make a straw man here because this doesn't apply to everybody. But there are some people who then will not acknowledge the possibility that a fetus is alive, is a living, there's some life value there, that it is a living person or will be, and the very potential of that constitutes something akin to murder. It's kind of in a weird gray area, right? They won't acknowledge that, though. And that's not consistent, because the question of where life begins, at best, is a philosophical question with no answer right now, no real answer. And so the most prudent choice would be to assume life so that you don't cause harm. That's my thinking, right? But if you don't acknowledge that, you're just denying reality. And let's say you choose the other. You're like, well, there's no proof it's a life. It's not a life. But you'd have to acknowledge the possibility that it could be. And they don't want to do that. And because they feel like any inch they give kind of makes us slide deeper into some kind of fascism. And that's inconsistent, right? So one thing I see about conservatives is they have more moral consistency, and therefore that's why their convictions are stronger and they're better able to unify. Because people that are self-identified liberal, left, whatever, they have problems uniting because they actually can't agree on a lot of really basic shit. So until they get their shit together, this is how it's going to be. There's going to be a lot of people that get called liberal or leftist who aren't necessarily, but it's like your belief system makes you fit here better. And then you're in this tribalist thing where it's just like left versus right, left hand versus right hand. You're just smack in the same face. So it goes nowhere. And that's another thing. It's like, here's what I think about the Charlie Kirk assassination. Here's my fucking hot take, right? Here he goes. Here we go. I don't know if it's good or bad, but this is what I feel. I don't know if you've ever read Eric Hoffer, but he tries to analyze what happened during World War I and II, what happened during this period of ethnic cleansing and pogroms and, gulags and labor camps and concentration camps. Like, what was happening? What caused people to become these monsters towards other human beings? and allowed them to turn a blind eye towards, you know, away from human suffering that they were causing. And one of the things he said, and I think you'll find that in other literature, older literature, old literature, even like ancient Greek literature, it's a kind of a consistent thing where in a society, there's always going to be, no matter what shape the society takes, it's going to leave haves and have-nots. Now, the have-nots will kind of go along to get along, I think, for as long as the people in power, the haves, do at least some due diligence to allow, at least if these people can't thrive, at least allow that they don't, that, you know, that they don't just completely go down the tubes. In other words, like the Italian Renaissance, this attempt to elevate people's perspective through beautiful art and spirituality and God and all that shit. And that's a good, right? Because then you give your have-nots something to hold on to hope for, you put them on the same page, at least on some level, of everybody else. And it's not like the Renaissance, the elites at the time were doing a mazeballs job at being very morally virtuous. There was a lot of assassinations back then, Italian factionalism. The popes were basically just glorified mafia. Vatican City was just the mob, a kind of mob. They also assassinated people, and they walked around like covered in fucking gold, just bling, like mob bosses, right? So it's not like they were perfect, but the thing is like, you don't have to be a perfect group of oligarchs or whatever. You just have to, like, don't fuck with the poor people. Don't fuck their kids. Don't steal their kids. Don't harm their kids, right? Don't interfere in a negative way with their futures, with their hope. If you take that away from them, then it starts to fester. And I think in this country, these so-called elites, and it's really just elitists, it's people who have a feeling of superiority, I think, towards the masses, quote unquote. I think they have turned predatory towards people in ways that have actually begun to disfigure, harm, erode people's virtue and goodness and their hope and their ability to strive and thrive and maybe eventually flourish and push past these toxic areas that they grow up in, right? The opportunity, just the opportunity. Like, you have to give people a chance. But the thing is like, there are fewer and fewer chances now. And then there's also the threat of further erosion of people's hope, aspiration, their sense of a nation, of oneness, not even necessarily a nation, but of a people. And all I see is a bunch of B2B businesses engaged in various ways in making money at the expense of people by manipulating their vices, their weaknesses, their flaws, their fears, their nothing that is good in them is being encouraged to flourish. Only the bad. So you have people who are sick, who are full of vice, eating and drugging and drinking and whoring, right? But only that. It's not like those things should not exist, but you have not given people anything to look forward to. You don't give people the fucking sky, dude. You gotta give people the sky. That's what I'm saying. Because if you don't give them the sky, all they have is the filth. And then that's my message to people who are maybe self-identified elites, people who are elitist, people who aspire to that. And so they back them up and they support them and they help them in this mission from Satan. I'm being right. But my message, I think, to the people who are celebrating on something, I don't think anybody's actually, I think there are very few people that are so-called celebrating the assassination of Charlie Kirk. But my message to us, I guess, is you're a loser. We are losers, okay? We lost. We are losers. In that one word that Trump used to brand his opposition, he is correct. We are losers in many, many ways. That's okay. It's like we're trying not to be, right? But you gotta think. You are looking at this assassination and the violence and shit that's happening everywhere as some kind of chickens coming home to roost kind of deal, much like 9/11. But what you don't realize is that you are looking at it from this perspective of smug self-righteousness, like you're like you exist in some isolated pedestal that is disconnected from this society. But you are this society. If it breaks down, you're fucked. You are fucked. And it's a lot of people, the rainbow movement people, you're not going to win. The most likely, because you're not even united enough, right? I would say most likely the authoritarian conservatives are going to win, and then you're fucked in that way. And then even if you do win, the reason why you want to win is not, they're not, you don't have good motivations. You believe that this needs to crumble for you to thrive. But what you don't realize is that you won't thrive. Nothing, you're a loser. You can't thrive in any hierarchy. Do you understand? No matter what you, no matter how much shit hits the fan, no matter how much the dust flies and things get all crazy, and then you're like, now's my chance. You have the same habits. You, when you look in the mirror, it's the same person. So you will eventually just be the same person, but just somewhere else. And at the cost, though, of the deaths of who knows how many people. And also rainbow people. I mean, you are the most vulnerable people in these kinds of scenarios. So I don't know. I think I would rethink that position. It's not like you're not allowed. I mean, think whatever the fuck you want. I'm just saying, if you're a loser, you're a loser, right? You're going to be a loser here. You're going to be a loser in China. You're going to be a loser in France. You're going to be a loser in Canada. You're going to be a loser in Mexico. You're going to be a loser everywhere because you're a loser. Do you understand what I'm saying? You will not fix things in any form of government, socialist, communist, anarchist, or otherwise. Nothing will be get better for you. You will just be the same person, but actually in a worse scenario, like in a worse context than you currently are. This shit is about to collapse. And we all feel it. We don't know how it's going to collapse. Could collapse upwards in some weird technological fucking revolution that goes. But no matter what, every revolution, you know, there's a lot of shit that happens in between before things get better. So I don't know. I don't think we should be celebrating the bad shit because you know what I mean? Like, I don't know about you, but, you know, I haven't fixed myself enough to feel confident about thriving in any context, let alone this one. Why the fuck am I gonna start at ground zero at another context? I barely, you know, it's not gonna happen. I don't even know. I don't even know how to do shit. There's so much I don't know how to do. I don't know how to socialize. I'm not even good at being a social person. Why would I want to live in a socialist context? I'm not social. I'm not good at it. And a lot of you aren't either. You're a bunch of disgruntled, maladjusted, you're just malcontents. You're just as misanthropic as I am. And you want to live in like something more social? This is the best you got right now, and it's probably not even going to last that long. You look out your window, you know, there are signs. You see the homeless people, they're starting to look more like wolves. They're starting to get jacked. Meanwhile, you're starting to get soft, right? We look like, you ever seen pigs go feral? When a pig is on a farm, it looks nice and pink and cuddly. I think that's what disturbs us about pigs. Pigs are kind of like us in a lot of creepy ways. You look in their eyes, you see the intelligence. You look at the skin, it's pink, like a lot of people's skin. You know what I mean? The limbs, there's no fur, really. The moles, everything is kind of weirdly human. But once a pig hits the forest, it starts to revert to a boar, a wild boar. So it starts to grow tusks. It gets like coarser skin, you know? It's a blah, 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 you know? Then you got like Bebop and Rocksteady out there in the fucking under bridges all across the city. Just people who have grown feral again because they haven't been able to be inside because there's no universal healthcare or whatever. And meanwhile, we're in here. We're still just chubby, happy little pigs. Even if you work for Uber Eats, you're kind of on the fringe, but you're still in. You're in the fold. You're in. People talk to you still. They look at you in the eye. Maybe less than they used to, but they're still there. And so just enjoy this time, because when shit hits the fan, I mean, you don't know who you're going to be. And let's say you are the person that thrives in this chaos that's coming, if it comes. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Then, what does that mean about you? That means that you thrive when millions are suffering. That's when you shine. You want that? You want that? That's your legacy? Maybe the biggest sacrifice you can make is to just be a loser in this society, because it's being held together somehow. I don't know, spit and shoestring and fucking paperclips, but it's fucking together still. We're all holding on. Maybe the biggest, most noble sacrifice you can make is to just be a loser in this society and do your due diligence and become not a loser, because it's possible, instead of trying to break everything and risk the safety of many, many thousands of millions of whatever, just so that you can finally live in the world where you feel you're at your peak. Does that make sense? I don't know. Well, all I gotta say is, looks like Osama bin Laden won this one. But let's see. I don't know. Let's see where it goes. That's all the time I have. Thank you for listening to my rant. Just in time. I'm starting to cough. All right. This was the Melissa Diaz Report. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. I guess this was kind of a long one. But thank you so much. I'll talk to you again soon next Monday. In the meantime, happy 9/11.